Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Mold Talks. I'm your host, Michael Rubino, and today's special guest is Emily. Emily, thank you for coming on and sharing your time with us here today to tell us about your journey.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So tell me, what was your run-in with air quality like that led you to realize that air quality is so important?
Actually, I was living in an apartment in Brooklyn, and I was there with two other roommates, and we all started to feel sick with different things, and it kind of hit us all differently, and we didn't know to look at the air quality at that point. We all kind of just blamed it on stress, or in my case, I was having these really strange recurring flu-like symptoms and almost like a tonsillitis, and for my other roommate, it was stomach issues. The other roommate, it was more neurological, so it wasn't until I moved out of that apartment and I had left, they were still there, that they noticed the walls turning a different color and mold actually growing on the walls. And it was at that point that we were like, maybe there's mold in this apartment and that's why we're all sick. And
Wow.
that kind of, and also not knowing what was wrong with me after getting throat cultures and seeing doctors, and all of them saying, well, you don't have anything, so you're probably just run down, or maybe it's autoimmune, or, you know, they didn't have any answers. So I saw somebody who was mold literate, which was very difficult to find, a doctor who was, and it actually turned out that I had reactivated Epstein-Barr virus, likely due to mold exposure, and then I ended up testing for mold exposure and had very high counts of it.
Wow. How many doctors did it take you to go through to finally find one that was able to steer you on the right path?
Three. That was three, like not including all the doctors and urgent care centers and places I went to just like for immediate help and relief. So it was two just sort of standard like primary care physicians and then three more functional naturopathic doctors. And the first diagnosis was for Epstein-Barr. And then I wanted to find someone who was a professional or, you know, professionally experienced with mold. And that was sort of their specialty. And the doctor who had diagnosed me with the EBV, she said that it wasn't exactly her strong suit, but she was aware of that as a root cause. So it took a while for me to find a doctor that listened to me and had a plan.
So were you ever diagnosed with Epstein-Barr virus before moving into this place?
No, I wasn't. I had known about Epstein-Barr virus because of mono, and my sort of preconceived notion was that if you get mono, if you're exposed to mono, you may never have symptoms, but you might have antibodies, and the virus that causes it is EBV, but it kind of just sits dormant in your body and doesn't create any problems. So I had no idea it could be reactivated and creates a havoc.
Totally. And so you didn't really experience like this initial Epstein-Barr virus illness. And then all of a sudden you move into this place, you start getting sick, and now you have reactivated Epstein-Barr virus from the exposure inside the home.
Right. And it didn't even end there. I ended up leaving that apartment, but moving into a different one where it was newly renovated. And I think that's something a lot of people who aren't, I guess, exposed, no pun intended, to this kind of situation. Renovated places seem safe and newer buildings seem safer than, say, the, you know, old building that might have, you know, been built in the 1900s or something like that. But this was a renovated home that I moved into. And within the first 2 weeks, I started to feel really, really sick with more neurological issues and all sorts of crazy symptoms that affected my concentration, my mood, insomnia,
Wow.
Everything, a skin, full body skin rashes. So it was really scary. I lost a ton of weight rapidly. And I knew at this point that maybe mold had something to do with it. I just had this inkling because of my experience at that point. And I had my landlord do an inspection. He hired an inspection company and they found mold there too. So I ended up having to leave that place as well.
Wow. So two for two, you found that were not a great air quality situation for you. They were causing some symptoms. Now you mentioned some symptoms, but you know, if you could put together a complete list of what you're experiencing, what would that look like?
It would take the length of this entire podcast, I think. It was definitely what I could put into its own bucket as Epstein-Barr virus symptoms. So that would have been enlarged, inflamed tonsils, like scratchy throat, sore throat, chills, like kind of a low-grade fever, feeling just really weak and run down. So that was all kind of Epstein-Barr. And then on top of that, I had like muscle wasting. I lost a lot of muscle, even though I was trying to stay active, but I really couldn't. I didn't have the energy to even walk that much. It was really frightening as a, like an active, healthy person. So I, to give a little context in terms of like weight loss and the muscle loss that I experienced, I'm usually around like 135 pounds, and I got, and I'm 5'3", which I think has been my standard for like my adult life. And I was as I think I weighed at least 110 pounds at one point.
Wow.
And it was over a very short amount of time, and I was trying to eat more, and it, so there was really no reason for me to be losing so much weight. Insomnia, I would go sometimes 2 days at a time without being able to fall asleep, and so I had to go on medication for just to be able to fall asleep because nothing was helping. So really bad insomnia. I actually found that I couldn't tolerate caffeine or alcohol, and I still really can't tolerate alcohol. I'd get heart palpitations and feel really bad anxiety, and it would just make me feel really physically ill even after like a few sips. So I haven't been drinking over the last 2 years, and that's been a really interesting and fulfilling experience to explore sobriety. But initially, it was kind of like I didn't understand why suddenly I couldn't tolerate alcohol anymore. Neurologically, that was also pretty frightening, just forgetting everything. I would leave cabinets open, I would do things, and forget what I was doing in the middle of it. My recall was awful. I just had this awful brain fog where I couldn't complete full sentences. And yeah, it was like ADD, but mixed with brain fog. It was weird. Headaches. I had this mysterious rash that dermatologists couldn't figure out what it was either. Some said, "Oh, it looks like it's fungal. Here, try this," and then that didn't work. Others were, just kind of say it's dermatitis. So I was prescribed like steroids and antifungals, and it was under my arms. I actually call it my mold rash. So I, like a canary in a coal mine, kind of. If I go into a place that has mold and I get this rash under my arms, it's just this like a barometer of my environment. My body is a barometer of my environment now that I've lived out of mold, and I don't think it's completely out of my system, but I've seen a remission in many symptoms that I'm sure I'm missing a ton. Those are just off the top of my head what I could
Yeah,
think of.
it's so crazy. There's a, there's a big connection with fungus among us and skin issues, mainly because it's twofold. We have the dermal exposure as opposed to the inhalational exposure, and then also when it enters the blood stream and it causes gut dysbiosis, when your gut microbiome is off, it typically displays pretty significantly on our skin.
Oh yeah, absolutely. My acne, I'm acne prone as an individual, but definitely have like an acne pattern, a breakout pattern when I'm exposed to mold too, and like the stomach issues there, my hormones, every system in my body was sort of the alarms were sounding. I experienced like I got cysts on my thyroid where I never had before, and I was experiencing thyroid dysfunction, adrenal fatigue, and yeah, you name it.
Okay, so how long have you been out of these two places now?
Been a little bit over a year. Yeah.
Okay. And how do you feel today versus just a year ago?
A lot better. A lot better. And I think that my mindset around it, I had to work really hard to get out of this state of fight or flight, fearing every room I walked into and every building I entered, and looking for signs like your platform has been a resource and so many others where I now can identify signs of water damage, not always, because sometimes it's not visible, but I do have a habit of looking up at the ceiling or down at like the baseboards and looking for these signs of water damage wherever I go. But I had to believe that I could get better and feel better before I actually did. And so it was very mental and emotional for me too, in terms of healing. But I feel leagues better living out of mold, feeling safe. I think that really helps my nervous system and helps me recover. But I don't think I'm even completely out of the woods. And I know I've had exposures over the last year. So even given all of that, I think just it's comparing, yeah, probably the worst place I've ever been in my life to now. You know, I'm fully functional and doing really well, feeling really well and energized and healthy.
That's awesome to hear. Congratulations. That is very difficult, right? To go from, you know, healthy to not healthy and then trying to get back to healthy. And, you know, I think for human beings, I'm very guilty of this myself. You know, if life is a tunnel and there's a light at the end of it, I know for me, I always just want to get to the end, right? But there's all these steps you have to take to get to the end. And we have to remember that these things are journeys. And so as you're taking each step, you're feeling better and better. And that's what matters. And eventually you get to that light at the end of the tunnel. And right. And we become stronger from it and we've learned from it. And you know, I think for me, when I see this, and part of the reason why this podcast exists is because there are so many people out there that like have no idea air quality is so important. I mean, it makes sense when you really look at it, but who looks at it, right? Because typically when we look at health, we're like, all right, I need vitamins, I need minerals, I need water, I need to exercise, right? I need to eat better food, all things that are equally important. But when's the last time someone said like, I wonder if the air we're breathing is really important? You know, unless you follow me or you're listening to this podcast, but the people outside of that, that we're trying to educate, that's where things really go awry. And, you know, finally you found a doctor who was like, hey, maybe it's mold, maybe it's your environment. Right. Cause before that, were you thinking that? Were you thinking, oh, this is mold?
No, absolutely not. I don't know what I thought it was. I was just like, something's wrong with me. And honestly, before I found my doctor and really started to like create this health plan and find other practitioners and people to sort of build out this healthcare team of, you know, whether it was like manual lymphatic drainage or acupuncture, like I started to really, you know, in that sense, I was very privileged to be able to incorporate that into my healing plan. And I know that cost and access is such an issue and a concern for many people who are in this situation. Also not being able to leave. I had the ability to leave and find a new place to live. So the process of getting better is also like, it's not so linear in terms of like, here's what you do. It's just, you can only do so much given your situation. And when I had to navigate like what to keep, what to try to clean, what to throw out. And I took to Facebook groups, which was maybe helpful in some cases, but mostly really scary. And like some of the forums that I was reading on, I mean, people are desperate for guidance and desperate for information. And I don't know that there's enough common knowledge in medicine, like you said, where people have this confidence in like, okay, here's what I need to do. Here's who I can talk to. It all feels like I had to really dig for this information and really like who to go to and who to find, you know, help from. So if I help anybody in like going through this, I try not to be like the mold person. Like I don't want to talk about mold all the time or like my experience, but I do find that it will come up organically. And I've met so many people in the same situation and I feel less alone and then they feel less alone. And that gives me hope that more and more people are becoming aware of it.
You know, I think community is really important. You know, we just came out of this pandemic where we lost our sense of community. And times have been tough already as it is, and we start adding this trauma because it is a real trauma that we experience when we are dealing with this and we're having to throw out belongings, clean stuff. I mean, you're already sick and you're having to deal all this physical stuff that needs to be done. It's a lot. And I think community is very important. Unfortunately, yes, you hit the nail on the head. The advice that's been given by professionals over the past 20, 30 years hasn't been very good. They're looking at things from a building perspective. They're not looking at things from a health perspective. And frankly, there is so much disagreement on the health piece of this entirely, just on what it does, how it does it. There's 259 medical journals out there, probably more since the last time I looked. And you still don't have this broad acceptance or this broad understanding of just how much this plays a role. With that being said, I mean, when you first started off on this journey and you find this doctor and they tell you, get your house checked, I think it's your air quality, and you do, and you realize it, right? I'm sure you probably had conversations with folks, family, friends, et cetera. Maybe even you went back to the other doctors that you saw previously and had some exchanges with them. I guess my question is, how challenging was it to talk about this? Did you experience any challenges as far as people not believing you or thinking, you're crazy, as you often hear in this topic? Would love to hear that.
I'm glad that you asked that question because I think it's something that, if I was talking to somebody about this, they wouldn't think to ask that question because, it's not something you think of unless you lived through it. And I have found that a lot of folks, including myself, who have experienced something like this and tried to convey this information and the severity of the problem to their family and their friends, and although they're loved and supported, people don't get it unless they've experienced it for themselves or unless they've really done their research and wanted to understand. And I think there is a resistance there. I have definitely felt it. My family and my friends understood that I was really sick and that I was going through something. And what I'd often hear and still hear from doctors, if you're doing an intake, they're kind of asking you, like, what medication are you on? And because of the EBV, I was prescribed Valtrex. And literally yesterday, like, I'm still having this conversation where people are like, why are you on Valtrex? And I have distilled this big story into kind of like a very succinct sentence of like, while I was exposed to toxic mold, it reactivated the Epstein-Barr virus in me. And because of that, I'm on Valtrex. And sometimes they ask questions, but most of the time they're like, oh. And what I've gotten so many times is, mold is no joke. Oh yeah, mold's scary. Oh yeah, did you experience any like coughing, any congestion? Or they always associate it with lungs, and that was like the one symptom I didn't have. My chest, my breathing, my lungs, and my sinuses, all that was fine. But it took a really long time for things to for my family and friends to really wrap their heads around it. And I found, though, after that, after they were really learning and kind of like understanding it for themselves, they started to look at their own homes and their air quality. And my one friend who's, feeling a little sick, she had her home tested for mold. So did my sister. And whether or not it was like an ERMI test, I don't know. It could have been something else, but they were still mindful about it as a potential issue. And, my parents had their home remediated, like with the they had a consultation with your company and had their home remediated after some water damage. So it's like in these ways, I think there's a trickle-down effect where as long as there's compassion and understanding, people will hear you and support you. But I've also been gaslit in certain situations where I've tried to self-advocate, and people just aren't really willing to do the research for themselves, even though I've provided all that I can to help them understand what I'm dealing with. But there's some kind of divide there. And it's not as easy as saying, like, oh, I have you know, knock on wood, but like if you tell someone you have a very recognizable disease like cancer, like, you know, MS, there's that, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. Now I understand what that could mean for you. But with this, given the lack of sort of mainstream knowledge, people kind of look at you, like you said, like, okay, crazy, like whatever you say. So,
It's
yeah.
true. You know, and I think it's an important question to ask because I think, you know, there's going to be other people listening to this podcast that are going through similar challenges that are having these talk tracks with folks who are like not understanding what they're going through. I mean, you can have all of the proof. You can have mold in your body, mold in your home. The molds can correlate, and people will still think that that's impossible. You know, our society is built on, you know, a pretty simplistic thing, right? It's like you mentioned cancer, right? What happens when you get cancer? Well, you do chemo. That's whatever. There's alternative treatments for cancer too, of course, right? But no, you do chemo. You have a headache. What do? You take an aspirin. You know, something's going on with your body. Good. You might need surgery. Like we have been ingrained into when this something happens, there's a problem for that. Now, if there was a mold pill, if a pharmaceutical company created a mold pill, a different story. Everybody would be like, oh, mold, yeah, you got to take the mold pill. Yep, this is a big problem. Everybody would be on board because we've been programmed to literally think that things are only true if there is some sort of recognized procedure for it. Well, where are we at right now? Well, we're at the infancy of understanding how environmental toxins can really cause a problem for us. You know, if people think that this is all hogwash or whatever, why does the FDA regulate mycotoxins in our food supply? Why is that a thing? Mycotoxins are a toxin of fungus. They're only produced by molds. Why would we be worried about molds and mycotoxins in our food supply if it doesn't make us sick? You know, if why do they make mycophenolic acid? Why do they make immune suppressant drugs out of mycophenolic acid, which is another toxin produced by mold? Why? Because when you get organ transplants or something to that effect, you're going to need to suppress your immune system so that your body doesn't reject the new organ. Good. So we know that from mold, we make immune suppressing drugs that suppress our immune system intentionally, right? So why don't we think that it can do it unintentionally when it's abundant in our home? And we have all of these things like mold's been around forever, you know. Why are we just getting sick now? It can't be mold,
Yeah,
you
your
know.
body can detox. That's what your liver is for.
That's what your liver's for. Your body can detox. Yeah, well, can your body detox when you're dealing with everything that there is for life to offer? Then what if there's genetics and epigenetics that come into play? Does anybody think about that? Yeah, it's we have to start to unwind the programming that we've been doing to ourselves as a society. You know, if we start looking at what did our parents tell us, what did our grandparents tell us, you know, what was medicine like back then versus what it is today? I mean, there's more and more medical doctors that are also training as functional medicine doctors so they can be what's called integrative medicine doctors, meaning they take approaches from both sides of the coin here. Why is that? Because, well, in some cases, we need immediate active treatment. And in other cases, we want to do more testing and understand and try to get down to the root cause, right? And I think it's time for all of us societally to realize that, A, we don't know everything about this planet and everything that's in it and all the things that could make us healthy or unhealthy. We don't. We're learning about new potential harmful chemicals. Every year, we ban new chemicals that we thought were safe. It's time for us to accept that our doctors don't know everything there is to know about the body. Why do you think that there's hundreds of specialists? Right? You could go to a doctor that is an expert just on the foot. Did you guys know that? And but you don't ask the foot doctor, what about my ear, right? Because they don't know the ear. They didn't study the ear. Well, a medical doctor studies the basics, right? And what do they study the basics for? So that when you have ailments, and what is medicine? It's taking symptoms and categorizing it into labels and then saying, okay, well, you could either have this, this, or this. Has anyone ever gone on WebMD lately? Yeah, it's like, all right, guys, I have, you know, diarrhea here. All right, good. Well, you either have diarrhea or cancer. You're right. Like, oh, great. Fantastic.
Love that for me.
Amazing. But why is that? Because there are so many different things that can intertwine with what's going on with us.
Right. And rarely are those specialists talking to each other. Like, that's the kind of the issue, I guess, with modern care or any kind of care, is that no one person can be an expert in anything. They have to sort of narrow their focus because the body is so complex.
Totally.
But I think that there has to be a larger understanding of what does influence your health. And that I think there's so much that we're understanding, and I see and have experienced all the sort of like the pieces of at least my puzzle, how mental health, mindset, you know, sort of your nervous system, honestly, like the state of your nervous system, how that influences your health. But that's a system that influences your immune system, which influences your, you know, your gut, which influences everything else. So it's all interconnected, and yet our treatment approach isn't.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah, it's true. You know, we talked about cancer earlier. Well, before we knew about cancer, cancer might have happened. And we didn't call it cancer, and we didn't have a treatment for it. Does that mean that it wasn't happening? No. So what we have to realize is that science and medicine are two things that will always evolve. Viruses will continue to mutate over time, so will bacteria and fungi. We will adapt also, right? You know, if we go look back at pictures of cavemen, they don't look like us today, right? So things evolve on this planet. Medicine and science will always need to evolve with it. Is it possible that fungi has mutated and evolved more and has become more dangerous to us? Maybe. Is it possible that it's because of our building practices today? Possibly. You know, we don't have all the answers, but it's okay to say we don't have all the answers. But what we do know is that there seems to be, because we take 20,000 breaths per day. And if you go on the American Lung Association website right now, it'll tell you that any particle smaller than 10 microns in size causes the greatest health risk to humans, because it's so small, it bypasses our self-defense mechanisms and immediately enters the bloodstream. What does that mean for us? Well, mold, smaller than 10 microns, typically between 2 and 4. Mycotoxins, 1 micron, smaller than 10. We have bacteria, much smaller than that. Viruses, much smaller than that. According to the Cleveland Clinic, 4 major contributors to disease. Fungi, which molds in there. Bacteria, viruses, and parasites. That's it, folks. 4 main contributors to disease. Does that mean that there's not other contributors to disease? Of course there is. But that's the 4 main things that we know of that cause the most problems today. Fungi is there. It's listed there. But yet, yeah, I don't know what it is about the word mold. It's like we don't say mold, you know, that's what makes us crazy.
Yeah, it's like, but I think it's maybe because before mold, we would say mildew. And mildew is just this normal thing that you smell that exists in the home, or, you know, it's musty, it's moldy, mildewy. They're all synonymous. And I think we have accepted it to some degree. And, you know, it's like, once you accept something and it's normalized, but in a way that's, you know, unpleasant but not harmful. I think when you say toxic mold or black mold is like the big one, then people are like, oh yeah, but still like not understanding just how it actually affects you, and the spectrum of symptoms you can experience and the ways that your health can deteriorate from exposure. It's very much like 1 + 1 = 2, black mold, you know, plus you equals like black lung. And that's what people think. And it's very much not the case for many people.
Yeah, that makes sense. No, I think you're onto something there. You know, we, we definitely took a bad turn with the whole toxic black mold movement, mainly because, you know, there are over 100,000 different species of mold, and it causes confusion because it somehow gives you this misconception that, well, there's only one species out of 100,000 plus that we know of that's going to be a problem. Maybe it makes you feel better, like, oh, it's okay, that mold is not black, it's green, we're good to go here, I don't have to worry about it.
Right.
But that could be a false sense of security. Aspergillus, for example, is typically white in color, and ochratoxin A is what is produced by aspergillus. And I'll tell you, I see high levels of ochratoxin A in almost anybody that's not feeling well. And mind you, the people that are not feeling well typically come to me as a point of contact for checking air quality, remediating homes, etc. And I just find that parallel really interesting. Why do they have high levels of ochratoxin A? And it's because aspergillus is harder to find. It's lighter in color. You don't spot it as easily. But also, back to that mildew conversation, you know, what is mildew? Mildew is a plant fungus that grew on plants called powdery mildew, it's from the Ascomycota kingdom. Aspergillus happens also be from the Ascomycota kingdom. And so for all this time, we're like, yeah, it's just mildew. No worries. We'll leave it there. You know, it's let it do its thing. It's no problem. And it's been doing its thing. You know, it's been wreaking havoc. You know, and I think that it's really important to start to change our mindset and say, look, I mean, we have technology today that we can test our dust. You mentioned Ermi earlier. We can test our dust. We can send it in. We can see what's abnormally high. Yeah, I'm not saying we want to live in a bubble and not live a normal life. But if we see something that's off the charts, then at least we can do something about it, right? And I think that's really important in terms of creating a healthy environment. While we take 20,000 breaths per day, I think it's really an important piece of the puzzle that has been neglected for so long.
Yeah, and I think too that like just knowing what tools you have at your disposal when you are exposed, because you can't, that was my real hurdle mentally, was that like I just was scared to go anywhere. I was scared to like stay at friends' houses or stay in hotels. I travel quite a bit for work, and you know, some hotels are really triggering for me, and I kind of know that in those situations, if I take more glutathione, if I up my binders, if I try to move my body and sweat and, you know, do things that I know I can at least try to get it out of my system faster, you know, and at home I can control my environment. And I think that that's, you can only do what you can do. And then there's, you can't control every environment you go into, and you certainly will not be able to avoid exposure completely. So the best you can do is control your home and be safe at home, and then have tools you can rely on for when you do find yourself in that situation.
I think, you know, you mentioned something about hope earlier, and hope is really important, right? Because hope gives us the ambition to continue on even in the hardest challenges in life. And I think for one thing, people, it's very easy to do, especially certain molds can be known to cause some neurological issues, anxiety and depression, to just name a few. I think when you're dealing with that, you know, you start to think about this mold's part of our ecosystem. I can't escape it. What do I do? How do I live? How do I survive? And it's like, you have to catch yourself and just say, all right, let's control what is in our control, right? And you mentioned earlier, you can't do anything about other people's environments, your supermarket, you know, you go to the store, et cetera. You're exactly right. But you can control where you spend the most time. And this isn't about a net zero. You know, this is about being in control and mastering of your time. And if you spend 90% of your time indoors at home, that's the place you want to focus on. The other 10%, yes, you may go into a place that's really toxic. It's going to happen. You're going to get knocked back. You're going to suffer for a couple of days. And, you know, it's as simple as getting back to that safe environment, you know, recovering and bouncing back. You know, it happens. We get knocked off our horse every now and then, but you got to have that hope, and you got to remember that control what you can control. If you start worrying about things that you can't control, that literally will add to your anxiety like you wouldn't believe.
Oh yeah, I know. Story of my life. But yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of resources out there that I found, like DNRS, which is, I'm going to butcher what that acronym actually stands for, but it's like dynamic neural retraining. It's essentially getting yourself out of a state of fight or flight through whether it be meditation or visualization, just recalling a more pleasant emotion or feeling or memory to get your body out of that state of fear and anxiety. And the more you can do that, and almost like retraining your brain a little bit to not automatically go down that worst case scenario path, but to, you know, imagine that there's another possibility. Imagine yourself getting better and being in a safe and a healthy environment. So although it sometimes sounds like you're tricking yourself into thinking these things, and it's a little bit of it's a little bit of a game you play with yourself in the beginning, but you're tricking your nervous system, your subconscious, in a sense, I guess, because you're evoking these thoughts, which evoke emotion, and your brain body doesn't really know that it's not real. But if you, like you said, start to worry about, you know, oh my God, this exposure is going to set me back. I'm never going to get well. I'm never going to feel better. I'm always going to be like this. Your body is going to feel all of that because you're creating this really anxious place in there. And so, I think for me, that was at least like the most challenging part. Obviously, all the physical stuff is challenging, but the hurdles mentally were the largest to overcome. But once I did, I felt that's what moved the needle the most for me.
It typically is. I mean, you know, our minds are so powerful, and that can be a good thing or a bad thing, right? Especially when we're in a dark place, it's going to be bad for us, because, you know, there's a lot of power in how we think. And if we can just shift our mindset, and sometimes that's all we need to kind of start to really head off in the right direction. Going back to, you know, I think one of the things that I think is always helpful for folks is knowing what you know now. You know, what is something that you can tell yourself, you know, a year or two ago when you were in the thick of it, that you kind of wish you knew back then, that would have made your journey easier?
Good question. I think I would have assured myself, like, it's going to be okay and you're not going to die. I would have said, I know you're scared and it's overwhelming, but you are doing the best you can. And you have support. People love you. They will help you. Don't be afraid to ask for help. I had a really hard time advocating for myself in like work settings. And I felt self-conscious, even if I knew I was in an environment that was triggering. I would question whether or not I should say something or leave, or, you know, do what was best for me based on like how it could have been perceived. And I think just I would have probably told myself that no matter what, my health is my priority. I have to put myself first. You're doing a great job. It's confusing. Everybody's confused. You know, you will find the people that will help you. Just keep pushing. And, you know, it might be a lifelong thing. Like, you're always going to know and be aware about mold. And it's not a death sentence. It doesn't have to be a burden. You can help a lot of people by sharing your experience, and eventually, like, you won't think about it 24/7. You will live a normal life. And I can say that for the most part, I'm living a pretty normal life. So I didn't really know all that, or I didn't have the foresight to say, to understand that at the time.
You know, it's one of the most remarkable things that you just said was, you know, you can live a normal life, you know, and it going back to mindset for a second, before you cross the street, what do?
You look both ways.
You look both ways. All I think we need to do is, before you create a home, before you move into a place. Look both ways. And if we do that and it becomes part of our normal routine, then we're not crazy. We're not living an abnormal life. We are being vigilant. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, we just got to look both ways before we start to call a place home, create this home. As if we do that, we're going to be better off for it. And then we can live normally.
Yeah, it's such a great analogy and way of thinking of it. You're doing your due diligence, knowing what's at stake and having, like, I'm so grateful for the knowledge that I have now, because I'm going to use it to avoid getting into another situation, like moving into a moldy apartment and then moving into another moldy apartment. Like I picked an apartment that's safe because I had that knowledge and, you know, knowing what to look for, understanding the signs of water damage. And I think even just really listening to your body and the signals it sends you, and looking at your home as, you know, it was safe when I moved in, but that doesn't mean it's going to be safe forever. There's other people in this building, and there's things that are out of my control that could create issues later down the road, but I have tools and I have resources now. And just like, I think my mantra was always like, do not panic. Like, you see it, you smell it, you feel it, just don't panic. It's going to be okay. So, I love the look both ways thing. I think that's great.
That's amazing. Well, you're right. I mean, you need this don't panic mantra, because if you start to think, oh, you know, one day this place will leak, you know, that's no way to live, right? Mm-hmm. It's statistically speaking, if we don't maintain our homes and buildings, yes, they will have problems. And so do what's in your control. And when things do happen, arm yourself with enough knowledge to take care of it properly so that you're in control of how it gets repaired. And I think that's really key too.
Yeah.
What is one, if you can only give one piece of advice to someone else who may be going through similar challenges that you went through, what would that piece of advice be?
I would say, trust your body. If you feel like something is wrong, and this is assuming that they might not know why they feel what they feel, why they're experiencing health issues. But if you feel in your body that something's wrong, if you're feeling sick, don't let any doctor or anybody for that matter tell you that don't let anybody undermine how you feel. Trust your body. And I think trust the process, trust that you will get better. So I think just coming back to that sort of mindset or mantra, if you want to have that, the idea of trust. Yeah.
Fantastic advice. Emily, this has been, you know, so enlightening and eye-opening. A lot of great conversation happened today. I really want to acknowledge and appreciate you for taking time out of your day to be here, to share all of your input and advice with others here. Obviously, there's probably a million things you could be doing right now, but it's just really important to me. And I really appreciate you for doing this.
Oh, absolutely. That means a lot. Thank you so much for having me. I was really more than happy to come on and talk about these things. Great.
Thanks so much, and we'll be seeing you soon.